This is Monday, December 26th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Coming up, the Israeli Prime Minister is incensed about the U.S. abstention in a U.N. Security Council resolution opposing Jewish settlements.
Friends don't take friends to the Security Council.
We will take a closer look. Also ahead for you, VOA's national correspondent Jim Malone looks at what has been one of the most momentous political years in U.S. history. And VOA's Luis Ramirez takes us to the birthplace of America's next First Lady. All on today's International Edition. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu on Sunday summoned the U.S. ambassador to discuss the U.S. abstention allowing approval Friday of a U.N. Security Council resolution demanding an end to Israeli settlement activity in the occupied territories. At his weekly cabinet meeting, Mr. Netanyahu said the Obama administration initiated it, stood behind it, coordinated the wording, and demanded it be passed.
Over decades, American administrations and Israeli governments have disagreed about settlements, but we agreed that the Security Council was not the place to resolve this issue. We knew that going there would make negotiations harder and drive peace further away. And as I told John Kerry on Thursday, friends don't take friends to the Security Council. I'm encouraged by the statements of our friends in the United States, Republicans and Democrats alike. They understand how reckless and destructive this UN resolution was. They understand that the Western Wall isn't occupied territory. I look forward to working with those friends and with the new administration when it takes office next month.
Well, that reference to the incoming administration of President-elect Donald Trump, who pressed Egypt to drop the resolution. A White House spokesman said, noting the increase in settlement activity, said the U.S. decision was consistent with the administration's opposition to settlement activity as a threat to an Israel-Palestinian two-state solution. History professor Michael Fishback of Randolph-Macon College in Virginia told my colleague Victor Beatty it was a remarkable development in Israeli-American relations.
The Security Council hasn't adopted a resolution criticizing or condemning settlements for many, many years. There's been an unwritten agreement from administrations in the United States, both Republican and Democratic, that in the final analysis, the U.S. would shield Israel from negative Security Council resolutions. The mere act of abstaining itself is remarkable. The Israeli reaction, while predictable, is in some ways remarkable. And the fact that all this is coming in the waning days of an American presidential administration is even more remarkable.
Well, it's interesting that it came just weeks before the Obama administration leaves office.
There were many hopes from certainly people who had an interest in advancing the peace process, certainly the Palestinians, in 2009 that the Obama administration would be different. And there were some early signals that he intended to really push forward on the resolution of the Palestinian-Israeli conflict. His legendarily frosty relationship with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu seemed to signal that the United States might, in fact, be moving to pressure Israel. The reality played out quite differently. The Obama administration signed the largest ever foreign arms deal in American history, and it was with Israel. The Obama administration essentially failed, both under George Mitchell and John Kerry, to advance the peace process, and despite all the bluster, really provided Israel with this significant diplomatic cover, particularly during the Gaza War of 2014. So here at the very end, one wonders if to what extent the Obama administration's actions in this instance reflect an attempt to thumb his nose at Benjamin Netanyahu here at the end, or an attempt to thumb his nose at Donald Trump, who has announced that starting January 20th, Israel will be even higher on the friendship level with the United States, or to some degree he's thumbing his nose at both.
Michael Fishback said Israeli critics of Mr. Netanyahu who wish for an end to the occupation and the Israeli-Palestinian conflict may feel vindicated that his angry reaction to the resolution represents a personal and diplomatic defeat for the Israeli leader. He also said it could lead to a set of international parameters for a peace settlement at a Mideast conference scheduled in Paris for January 15th that could lead to another Security Council vote. Make sure you stay with VOA on air and online, on TV, everywhere we are as we follow this story. Speaking of online, our social media guru, Andrew Palshevsky, is joining us by telephone today from his holiday lair, wherever might that be. And Andrew, but you still have your trusty computer with you, obviously, and you're following things that are going along. And we did speak briefly earlier today, and you did mention the very early and untimely death of a famous pop singer.
Yes, sad news coming out of London yesterday that George Michael, of course, of Wham, of a very successful solo career, had died at the age of 53, apparently of heart failure. And 2016 has been one of those years where so many major figures in music and entertainment have died that it's actually to the point where this morning here in New York, on both the cover of the New York Post and the New York Daily News, they both say that 2016 was the year that we lost all these great celebrities: David Bowie, Prince, Florence Henderson, very recently of the Brady Bunch, and now George Michael. And as we often see when we lose a celebrity like this, a lot of tributes pouring in on social media from fans around the world, famous and regular folks alike, and not just in the music industry, but really across all the gamuts of entertainment and throughout the world. And particularly with George Michael's song Last Christmas, because this was, of course, one of his big songs that's played. You hear it dozens of times throughout the holiday season, whether it's on the radio or in stores. And so a lot of people citing that they're listening to that song even today, the day after Christmas, in memory of George Michael to honor his life. So very sad passing indeed, and one that the world is remembering on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram.
Well, as far as things that are happening in the world, I guess a lot of people are almost taking off for the holidays and aren't really, you know, contributing all that much. Or am I wrong about that?
In terms of social media or just in terms of...
Yeah, I think in terms of social media. I mean,
it's a quiet week. I think that's, you know, people, a lot of the posts that we see on social media this week are people celebrating with their friends and family. They're on vacation. So it is kind of a quiet week, and it's actually probably the last quiet week we're going to have here in the U.S. Before we kick up with the inauguration, which is about 3 weeks away with the new presidential administration. So I think people are trying to enjoy the time as much as they have, and actually even disconnect. And that's part of the reason, too, why we see maybe fewer people on social media.
Hallelujah. You know where I stand on that, right?
Absolutely. Well, and case in point, you know, as we talked, about social media and how it can be a way for people to grieve when these celebrities die. Well, it can also be, unfortunately, a way that hoaxes get spread. And I know you'll remember we talked last week about this group R-Mine, who goes on and they hack into Twitter accounts.
Yeah, the white hat guys, right?
We were able to hack in, and this is, we're exposing a security concern, so you can fix it. It's kind of that white hat hacking that they do. Well, they went on, and this R-Mine group actually hacked into the Sony Music Twitter account. And rather than pointing out and saying, oh, Sony, you might want to get this fixed, they put out a tweet erroneously reporting that pop singer Britney Spears had died. And with 2016 being this year where we've lost so many celebrities, people instantly jumped on this and were expressing their condolences and concern. Thankfully, she's not dead, but unfortunately for Sony Music, they had their account hacked, and this group was able to publish that. So that white hat group doing some good through social media, trying to expose those security flaws, maybe crossed a bit of a line this time.
Got the hat a little dirty, huh?
Yes, I think there might be a little more of a gray hat now.
Yeah,
This is, you know, again, as we've talked about time and time again on the show, the fake news, and it's not just fake news about things that are, you know, politics, geopolitics. It can be about entertainment as well, and it can be a very dangerous thing. Multiple celebrities have had this happen to them over the years where there have been rumors that they've passed away, and they've had to come out and say, no, I'm still alive. It was just a hoax.
Andrew Palshevsky joining us from his Christmas time off, and we really appreciate you being with us, and we'll talk again on Friday, hopefully. Okay?
Sounds good.
Andrew Palshevsky, right here on International Edition. Among the top stories we're covering throughout the world, Russian officials declared Monday a national day of mourning following the crash of a Russian military passenger plane that apparently killed all 92 people on board, including members of a world-famous Russian choir. India tests a long-range nuclear missile that's capable of hitting targets as far away as China. Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe will visit Pearl Harbor with President Barack Obama Tuesday to express the value of reconciliation between Japan and the United States. At least four people are dead in the wake of Typhoon Noctem that brought heavy winds and rains to Manila overnight. English singer, songwriter, and record producer George Michael has died. He was 53 years old. Expanded coverage of these stories and more on the VOAnews.com website and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition, and this is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
U.S. oil and natural gas production has been boosted in recent years by a drilling process known as hydraulic fracturing, commonly called fracking. But this practice has also been criticized for its possible impact on the environment because of the wastewater the method generates. A new study published in the American Chemical Society's Environmental Science and Technology, which examined solid well waste from Marcellus Shale in Pennsylvania, finds that the waste contains naturally occurring radioactive materials that had not been previously reported. In addition to the early reports of uranium-238 and radium-226, the study indicates that the collected waste samples also contain elevated levels of the radioactive isotopes uranium-234, thorium-230, lead-210, and polonium-210. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition from the Voice of America. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. When Time magazine chose President-elect Donald Trump as its Person of the Year for 2016, it came as no surprise after an election campaign that at times transfixed Americans and millions around the world. VOA national correspondent Jim Malone has taken a look back on some of the major stories of the year just past and some of Trump's challenges as the incoming 45th president.
The previous question is ordered, and the House will be in order.
House Speaker John Boehner and his fellow Republicans hope to gain congressional seats in November by focusing on the troubled rollout of President Obama's health care law.
Why did the president mislead the American people when he promised they could keep their health care plan? You know, why is Obamacare forcing Americans to lose access to the doctors they like?
Democrats insist public support for the law will increase over time. But even President Obama acknowledges that Democrats are paying a political price in the short term.
There is no doubt that our failure to roll out the ACA smoothly has put a burden on Democrats, whether they're running or not, because they stood up and supported this effort through thick and thin.
The president's party often loses seats in the second-term midterm election, and the fate of the health care law will have a major impact on the elections, says analyst John Fortier.
And I think the uncertainty of what will happen between now and the midterm elections is really the biggest factor. Uncertainty for the American people, but also for a lot of Democrats who are nervously eyeing the elections themselves and wondering how they're going to be affected.
Public attitudes toward Congress are dismal in the wake of the government shutdown in October, says Quinnipiac pollster Peter Brown.
The American people are frustrated. They see what's going on in Washington, scratch their heads and say, can't these guys make anything happen?
Lawmakers with Tea Party support got much of the blame for the shutdown. And that has sparked a new battle within the Republican Party, says Republican strategist Ford O'Connell.
Many mainstream Republicans are now pointing the finger at the Tea Party as well, not just Democrats. The Tea Party is on to the right issues. The question is, are they going to change their tactics and their messaging?
House Speaker Boehner recently lashed out at conservative groups that oppose compromise.
Well, frankly, I think they're misleading their followers. I think they're pushing our members in places where they don't want to be. And frankly, I just think that they've lost all credibility.
Democrats won control of the House in 2006, but Republicans won it back in 2010. No major tide for either party is expected this year, says analyst Rhodes Cook.
I don't think we're going to have any big wave election like that, in part because we had it, you know, in 2010. Those seats that were ready to topple, you know, have toppled. We're down basically to seats that both is on pretty firm ground for the Republicans.
Republicans are favored to hold their majority in the House, and the real battle will be for control of the now majority democratically held Senate. Jim Malone, VOA News, Washington.
This is VOA.
Jazz America.
This is Russ Davis, the host for Jazz America, where each week we give you the best of jazz past and present and conversation with the music makers. You can hear the program online at voanews.com and on the air on VOA each Saturday and Sunday at 13 hours Universal Time. Join me for Jazz America and help me celebrate the greatness of a century of jazz. Listen at 13 hours Universal Time, Saturdays and Sundays, on voanews.com and the Voice of America.
Voice of America's news, talk, and music programs are now at the tip of your fingers. Find everything at www.voaafrica.com. Listen to VOA's program lineup live anytime, day or night. Pick out your favorite shows and listen anytime you want. Download our podcasts. Check VOA Mobile from your cell phone. Subscribe to VOA Newsfeed. VOAnews.com.
We continue here on International Edition. Russian officials said today that terrorism is not among the likely causes of a crash of a Russian military passenger plane that apparently killed all 92 people on board. Earlier Monday, the Russian transport minister said Sunday's crash was likely caused by pilot error or a technical issue. The plane crashed into the Black Sea 2 minutes after taking off from the Sochi airport in good weather conditions. Among the passengers, dozens of members of Russia's world-famous Alexandrov Ensemble, better known around the world as the Red Army Choir. Disney's latest animated movie, Moana, is riding a wave of popularity around the globe. It's inspired by the folklore of the Pacific Islands. Scholars say for centuries, some of the ancient world's greatest navigators discovered and settled on the many islands of Oceania. But about 3,000 years ago, those voyages stopped for about 1,000 years, and no one knows why. That's where Moana, which means ocean in many Polynesian languages, begins, as Heidi Chang reports. Well, unfortunately, we due to technical difficulties, we could not locate that feature, and hopefully we can find it for you. But nevertheless, let's get back to the inauguration of the United States next president, Donald Trump. His wife, who will be the new first lady, was not born in the United States. And the place where she was born is in a state of celebration. VOA's Luis Ramirez has more.
Saunitsa, population 5,000, is a medieval town that suffered the ravages of World War II. In the post-war communist years, it became an industrial center. Not exactly the place of dreams, but big dreams are what happened here. After growing up in a nondescript apartment block, Melania Knaus went on to fame and fortune. Now, Saunitsa honors Melania at this bake shop, a cake modeled after the former supermodel.
We were very proud of Melania's success. She used to be one of us, and we were really happy for her. And everything what we do is making cakes. So we create simple but luxury cake. We wanted to have a beautiful cake like she is.
Some thought went into the cake. Elegance and a touch of gold.
We used all the best ingredients that we have at that moment because only the best was good for Melania. And we use also white chocolate because we wanted a white, we want to make a white cake because she wears a lot of white dresses.
Melania's husband also gets a tribute. At a local restaurant, a chef puts together a hamburger in honor of the incoming American president. It starts with shavings of yellow Slovenian cheese fried to a crisp to resemble the hairdo that is now known across the globe. Some barbecue salsa on the side because he says a Mexican touch makes things better. And voila, a presidential burger.
The idea with the cheese came from his hair. Just so you know, we don't make fun of the president, but the cheese associates with the president somehow. And we used arugula because it is a bit more sophisticated kind of salad. What is the message of the Mexican barbecue salsa? We think that everyone deserves a chance, no matter where he comes from. So we added a bit of Mexico, too.
Local vintners are getting ready to put out a new wine called First Lady. This winemaker, a friend of Melania's family, says residents are sad that Donald Trump has never been to Sionica, and even sadder that the town's most famous daughter has yet to return.
If only she would come with a big heart and hug someone in our town or in the middle of Ljubljana and say, "Here I am." This is something that every individual, not only in Slovenia, but also elsewhere, could wish.
For Melania, home will soon be the White House, but here, the home fire is also waiting. Luis Ramirez, VOA News, Sionica, Slovenia.
That is going to wrap up our program for today. This is International Edition. Find us at voanews.com, like us on Facebook at VOA Now, and follow us on Twitter at VOA_IE. Our director, Diane Gao, our engineer, Dan Kraft, and I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Enjoy your day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
U.S. Ambassador to Pakistan David Hale, along with National Highway Authority Chairman Shahid Ashraf Tarar and Frontier Works Organization Director Major General Mohammed Afzal, opened an exhibition displaying photos of the recently rehabilitated section of National Highway 25 connecting Shaman to Kalat through Quetta, Baluchistan. The United States, through the U.S. Agency for International Development, or USAID, funded the construction of the 111 kilometers needed to complete National Highway 25 in cooperation with the Frontier Works Organization, the prime contractor, and the National Highway Authority. USAID provided $63 million to rehabilitate the highway and has committed an additional $27 million for further improvements. The newly restored highway will increase trade and economic integration by linking Pakistan with Afghanistan and its Central Asian neighbors. The road, which stretches from Shaman on the border with Afghanistan to Karachi, will also improve the lives of the people of Baluchistan by expanding access to basic health care, education, and other social services. The Frontier Works Organization began construction in October 2014. This road is a concrete demonstration of America's commitment to help bring peace, stability, and prosperity to Pakistan. It is a testament to the far-reaching benefits of our partnership, as it will serve the people of Pakistan for generations to come, Ambassador Hale said at the inauguration. The funding for this highway is one element of USAID's $681.5 million FATA infrastructure program, which has restored essential public infrastructure in remote communities. To date, the United States has funded the construction and rehabilitation of more than 2,200 kilometers of roads in Pakistan, including the four major trade routes between Pakistan and Afghanistan. The United States is proud to work with its partner, Pakistan, to help build the infrastructure that will enhance trade and better the lives of the people of Pakistan and the Central Asian region.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.